It is time now for Talking Books, made possible by Epilogue Books on Franklin Street. Hey, relax and unwind in the heart of Chapel Hill with a delicious coffee, a great book, indulgent chocolate, or a glass of wine or craft beer with friends. Epilogue is a place where people can gather to cultivate new ideas, learn old ones, or just escape into the welcoming atmosphere that books, chocolate, and coffee all provide. Victor and I join in the studio by Susan Brown, who heads up the Chapel Hill Public Library, chapelhillpubliclibrary.org, their website. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing well. How are you?
I am tired, but otherwise good.
Yeah. How late were y'all here last night?
I was only here until around 10:30 because we signed off on the air at 10. We had a couple little logistical side work things to do. And then I left. The newsroom folks were still here. Some of them were here, I think, well after midnight.
Wow.
Piecing together stories. So,
wow,
yeah,
that's
a lot.
Commitment.
A long
and
night.
Service,
yeah,
to the community.
Yeah.
Well done.
We love election night, though, especially local election night, because, you know, that's our bread and butter. We love digging into the weeds on that and covering it. So it's always a good night.
And it is always great to have Tom Jensen here.
Yes.
Whenever I hear him on the radio, I think back a few years ago when we were doing Nerd Night downtown, he gave a really, really great talk about conspiracy theories,
yes,
and politics. And so, great.
I also gave a talk then.
You did. You also gave a great talk. What was your talk on?
Apparently, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, well,
remind me.
It was about the founding era and like things and debates and stuff,
yes,
that was happening then and how they kind of translate into today. Yeah, it's good.
Also great.
Overshadowed by Tom Jensen,
well,
but that's fine. He's really good at what he does.
Guess who gets to start today, Susan?
That's right. I will say, though, it is coming into my time of year. I like the cool weather, and
yep,
many people think, like, summer reading. Summer is the season for reading. No. Give me a cold day and a quilt and a,
yep,
hot beverage, and I'll just read all daggum day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. How do you, have, like, a reading blanket or a reading quilt?
I have
like
several
a favorite
of
one.
Them.
Okay,
yeah,
good. Yeah.
Some upstairs, some downstairs. There's really one in every room.
All right,
yes,
I like it.
Yes.
Like there's a book in every room. There's also a reading blanket.
That's
in
right.
Every
I
room.
Have an upstairs book and a downstairs book, and I have I have many downstairs and upstairs blankets.
Right. I like it. Hey, we're talking books with Susan Brown, and let's talk books. It's the day after Election Day. Yesterday was a historic day. Elections across the country, here locally. Braves won the World Series, so a lot happened. Let's talk about today in history, though, and get inspiration from that.
A lot happened today in history, y'all.
A lot happened today in history.
I got two books.
Ooh.
I could have easily had, like, six. So, yes, Victor, I will start.
Okay, right. Good.
Start with one and we'll wrap around.
That's right. Yep. Okay. So, the first one that jumped out at me was 1957. On this day in history, the Soviet Union launches a dog into space. The first animal to go into orbital space was Laika aboard Sputnik 2. Part Siberian husky, kind of a mutt. Big deal to put an animal into space. So that made me think of a really, really great graphic novel called, what else? Laika. It's a graphic novel. The author is Adam, I gotta find his last name. Wait for it. Where is it? Sorry, I was not prepared. Nick Abadsis. There was an A in there someplace, but it's a graphic novel. I think it would be enjoyable by a variety of ages of kids, kind of middle grade. But what I love about it is it's in graphic form, and there are a lot of great graphic novels about dogs. I'm just saying.
Yes.
But it's both about the dog. There's a character who's a political prisoner, and then there's the scientist who's charged with figuring out how to put an animal into space. And it is heart-wrenching and sad and joyful and all of those things. It's a really, really great book. So Laika by Nick Abadsis.
How nonfiction is it? How fiction is it?
I think it touches on the best things because it's factual, but then it weaves in the emotions of the humans that were involved and sort of projects what you might feel if, you know, you were tasked with this moment and with this job. So,
okay.
Great book.
Awesome. Laika. All right. Victor?
So on this day in history, in 1906, the International Radiograph Conference in Berlin selected SOS as the worldwide distress signal.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so we're going to use that to segue into me talking a book called The Lamplighters by Emma Stonix, which hopefully I said her name right. And it's sort of like how the Essex inspired Moby Dick, or the Mary Celeste is the origin for lots of ghost ship stories. The Lamplighters is loosely based on an event in the early 20th century where three dudes just went missing from a lighthouse off the coast of Scotland. They just, like, you know, left stuff there. I mentioned the ghost ship.
Mary Celeste?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's similar. Like, no stuff was disturbed. Everything was normal. No explanations. No logs. Just gone. Never heard from again. And this book takes that origin story, that cultural memory, and moves it forward to the 70s to make it a little bit more relatable. And then works in parallel narratives of the lighthouse keepers and an author in the modern day who writes books and is trying to figure out what happened to write her own book. So it's it ends up being more of an atmospheric tale. It's something that you read if you want to feel a certain way. And if you're looking to feel like you're sort of trapped in some heavy fog, The Lamplighters has what you're looking for, because it is very mysterious a lot of the time. It's really fun to read. It's a good going into fall book, in my opinion.
That book sounds like everything that I want to read in a book, and I've never heard of it.
Yeah, you should read The Lamplighters. It's good.
I'm going to get on our app right now and see if we have it at CHPL.
Awesome. Emma Stonix, S-T-O-N-E-X.
Awesome.
Stonix. All right. So we got The Lamplighters. We got Laika. I'm going to go in closer to Susan's time than Victor's, 1956, 1 year earlier. Then 57, The Wizard of Oz aired on TV for the first time. And this is part of the story of The Wizard of Oz. Like, when it came out in 1939, it had some degree of popularity. It got nominated for Best Picture. People watched it, but it wasn't a huge hit. It didn't become a huge hit until it started getting re-released in theaters in the 40s. And by the time 1956 rolls around, it was popular enough that when it aired on TV for the first time, it was a big deal. They had Bert Lahr, like, hosting it on TV. 45 million people tuned in to watch it in black and white, I assume, because it's 1956. Everyone's got black and white TV. So that, like, opening the door moment, it's kind of anticlimactic. But, you know, other than that,
I didn't even think about that.
Yeah.
Me either. I'm like, oh, yeah, that's a bummer.
A little bit of a bummer, but, you know, it's cool. And not even sepia tones in Kansas, just like straight black and white the whole way through. Didn't really get that. But still, like, a major, major event, and also kind of an indication of just how popular and how big a deal TV had gotten. But The Wizard of Oz, like, its popularity, like, this is a huge part of its story. And a couple of years ago, this is a local author, Peter Gazzardi, who wrote a book called Emeralds of Oz, which was basically an everything you need to know you can learn from The Wizard of Oz kind of book, and taking, like, little lessons from The Wizard of Oz and applying them to life. And it was just a really fun read and a fascinating story, and just a really cool conversation with him on the air about the lessons that you can take from the book, but also just how deeply impactful that movie has been to people like him, where you watch it over and over again and you can start to develop, like, a life philosophy around it. But it's a really cool book. It's short. It's easy to read. It's called Emeralds of Oz by Peter Gazzardi, and it's a local author. He's really cool.
Nice.
Yeah.
So my second one that I came up with, again, sticking in this same era, is 1952. Clarence Birdseye marketed the first frozen peas,
nice.
Which made me think about a wonderful book called Something from the Oven by Laura Shapiro. And it's all about the sort of 50s era American food ways post-war, where they took many of the foods that were developed for soldiers, the MRE type things and the freeze-dried meals, and they realized that there could be a commercial market for them, whether that's TV dinners or frozen peas or boxed cake mixes. And then they basically, the advertisers and the corporations, tried to convince American women that they didn't like cooking, or cooking was too hard.
Right.
And so it's less about, like, it's not a book of recipes, but it's really about food culture, American culture, corporate culture in the 50s. She's a wonderful author. She's written about Julia Child and some other food books, but Something from the Oven by Laura Shapiro is my second book pick today.
And that is Talking Books. ChapelHillPublicLibrary.org for more on the library. Look up those and many, many others online on their catalog. Susan Brown, as always, thank you so much.
Thanks, y'all.